We're getting close, ladies and gentlemen. June 24th is almost upon us. And we will have, by that date, by the end of that date, a new Democratic nominee for governor of the state of Maryland. As you know, we had Delegate Heather Mazur here in studio, and she shared with us her thoughts, her visions of the state of Maryland and what she was looking forward to. And then we had Attorney General, Maryland State Attorney General Maryland Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown joined us in studio and shared his vision about what he wanted the state of Maryland to look like. And we're pleased to be joined this morning in studio by the third person of that triumvirate there, Maryland Attorney General Douglas Gansler. Good morning, Attorney General.
Good morning. The last shall be first. Yes.
The last. I like that. Very good. Very, very good point. I want to start off with you with the whole issue of polls, because I have been very, very concerned up until this past weekend about the lack of polls, the fact that we have not seen a lot of polls in this governor's race, even though we're really looking at a new governor. This isn't a reelection. This is an open seat. And then we see the Washington Post poll and the Baltimore Sun poll kind of show Lieutenant Governor with a commanding lead on yourself and Delegate Mazur. Your response to these polls?
Well, I think they should actually have had a lot more articles on our records and our vision as well. And I think they haven't really done a great job of covering the race in terms of the volume of it. But the polls, you know, the polls are a little bit misleading. You know, we obviously, as candidates, we all have our own polls, and our polls show it extremely tight. This particular poll was interesting. So they had me down like 20 points or something. And I think the validity of those polls was just shown last night. You know, Eric Cantor was a congressman.
He was at 30 points.
He was 34 points 10 days ago and lost by 12. So it was a 46-point swing. And they literally wrote in the Washington Post, the only question is whether he wins by 20 or more. And the fact of the matter is, in a primary, they're very volatile. People are just focusing. People are just learning the candidates. People are just realizing how important this particular primary is. Do you want 8 more years of the O'Malley-Brown administration, you know, 30 taxes, another 40-some-odd fee increases, jobs leaving Baltimore, jobs leaving the state, or do you want a new vision and actually bringing jobs back, and somebody's going to work on the fact that we have the second-worst minority achievement gap in the country? And I think people are coming around to us. The other piece is actually, and you mentioned Heather Mazur, people are starting to learn about all of us. I mean, I really literally ran into a woman at the subway this morning that didn't know that Delegate Mazur didn't graduate from college or was a lobbyist for her living and was paying herself out of campaign funds to her lobbying company, which is she and her wife. And so, you know, it's interesting. I mean, they're just starting to learn about our records, what we want to do and where we want to go. And I think at the end of the day, we should win, and hopefully we'll win comfortably.
Are you concerned? You mentioned the lack of coverage. I'll agree totally with you in reference to the records, really, I don't think, in a big way being put out there of all of you by the independent media. Would you also agree that just the couple of debates that you've had, I think the Maryland voters really deserve more opportunities to hear from the three of you than they actually have, so they could make some comparisons?
Well, I think that's right. And I'd like to debate every day, all day, because I have a 22-year record of seeing problems, seeing things that are unfair, working relentlessly to get them fixed and actually get things done for the people that I serve. And I've been elected 4 times to do that. And so, but the problem, of course, is the campaign settled on 3, which I thought was too few in the first place. And then the lieutenant governor decided to disrespect the people of Baltimore and not even show up for one of them. So, you know, it's unfortunate. Would I like to see more of them? Of course. I think people should be able to see us on the same stage and defend. You know, what have you been doing for the last 8 years? Why are HBCUs so underfunded? Why do we have this minority achievement gap? Why, you know, are we 49th in the country in terms of personal income growth? And, you know, we've lost over 8,000 small businesses while you've been sitting there these last 8 years. And now you say, well, I've got a plan for this. I've got a plan for that. I've got a 10-point plan. Well, what have you been doing for the last 8 years? And I think people should be able to know the answers to those questions.
Maryland State Attorney General Douglas Gansler is here in studio. We're going to take some phone calls while the Attorney General is here. We have his time, at least until he has to go. So I want you to stay with us. Now, the Lieutenant Governor the other day, Doug Gansler, told me and told my audience that he had no anticipation, no view in the future, no in the foreseeable future, he said, of raising any taxes. What does a statement like that mean to you?
Well, I think he's desperate. He knows he's in trouble in this campaign, and so he's making empty promises. I mean, he doesn't really have credibility with that, because they've literally raised 40 straight taxes, and you haven't heard a peep out of the lieutenant governor during the 8 years while he's been sitting there doing that. Meanwhile, they're breaking the back of the middle class in the state, and people want to leave. I mean, look, there was a Gallup poll the other day, it was a week or two ago, It said 47% of the people in Maryland would rather live somewhere else. Now, the lieutenant governor's from Long Island. He's, you know, just showed up in Maryland. He doesn't maybe understand what a great state this is that we grew up in, that has potential, and we want people not to want to leave here, but want to stay here. And by the way, want to be able to raise their children here. But if there's no jobs, if we're in a city, in Baltimore City, where 46% of the adults don't have work, we've got problems. And so I think you have to start by saying and understanding we have a problem, that there's there should be recognition that companies continue to leave. McCormick just said they're going to leave. I mean, so the exodus of companies has got to stop. We've got to actually turn that around, bring jobs back. Why do we need to bring jobs back? Because we need to increase the tax base that these guys keep taxing, and so have more people paying in and actually are working every day.
Since you brought up the issue, and I have a lot of small business people, I'm coming to your calls in a moment, so stay with me, ladies and gentlemen. But a lot of small business people call me, Attorney General, and they say as much as tax relief would be beneficial to them, it is not as onerous as the regulatory environment that we have in the state that just bombards them with filling out all types of paperwork and doing anything. I had a lieutenant governor sitting there. He said he would try, if he were governor, to try to trim some of that regulatory atmosphere that's out there. What about yourself?
Well, it needs more than a trim. It needs a buzz cut. You know, you hear that all the time from business owners, small businesses in particular, that we should be promoting and helping grow. Not only in the incubator phase, but in adolescence. They've been around for a while. We need to continue to make sure they have access to capital and so forth. But, yes, the regulatory environment is too much. And the lieutenant governor really can say what he would do, but the problem is he doesn't have credibility because he's been there for 8 years and hasn't done anything. And so, you know, you and I know perfectly well the first 6.5 years when the guy was lieutenant governor, I at least had never seen him in Baltimore. I work here every day. I've never seen him here. Started showing up recently. The only thing he's actually managed, the only thing he's ever led or managed in his life, was the Affordable Care Act rollout, which was, as by all accounts, including the Sun and the Post, was a national embarrassment. And he hasn't really answered to why that was and what happened.
Well, we're going to get to the Affordable Care Act, but I want to get a couple of phone calls while I have. Let's get to Maria in Baltimore. Maria, you're on with Doug Gansler and me. Go ahead.
Hi, Doug. You say you know and that you love Baltimore more than any other candidate. I just want to know, how is that true? How have you showed this love and expressed your knowledge of Baltimore?
Well, it's not a knowledge. I mean, let me say a few things. I've been coming here since I was a little kid. You know, it was an Orioles season ticket holder in a plan beginning in 1989 before either of the other two stepped foot in Maryland. You know, I do work here. It's an anomaly that the Office of the Attorney General is in Baltimore. I'm one of the very few, if not the only, attorneys general that doesn't work in the Capitol. And so, you know, you can sort of start with a number of things. I mean, one thing was I play lacrosse. I still play lacrosse. I coach my kids. I saw there was a need in Baltimore City for an inner-city lacrosse league because the kids in Baltimore didn't have the same opportunity as the kids at Gilman and St. Paul's and McDonough and Calvert Hall to you know, play and then go get college scholarships. So I started, not when I was running for governor, 6 years ago, I started a league. We play every Saturday morning. I didn't just start it by pushing a button. I actually show up every Saturday morning. Carroll Park or Patterson Park, we expanded to this year. We have over 400 kids in that, boys and now and girls, and we have an African-American male come each week and speak to them about, you know, where they were in their careers and what they could do. And so that's just an example of the kind of thing. Another thing I would mention is, when I was elected by my 49 other attorneys general to be head of the National Association, we reached an agreement with the five national banks. I took on the big banks, and we, as a result, got $1.5 billion into the housing market here in Maryland to keep tens of thousands of families in their homes that would otherwise have been foreclosed upon. Much of that was in Baltimore City.
I want to follow up with a Baltimore question because I heard you, or parts of what you had to say on WOLB when you were in the debate over there, particularly as it related to the arrest policy in Baltimore City. And very few candidates have spoken to that because that also has a driving factor with the unemployment within the city of Baltimore. I mean, when you have an arrest record, it's very difficult to get a job. And I really do think that the governor can play a role working with the mayor to try to have a different atmosphere when it comes to law enforcement.
Well, the Brown and Malley administration are the same people. They believe in mass arrests. They believe we need to build another juvenile facility in Baltimore. And they're the ones that ran the Baltimore City Jail. So I'm not sure they have a lot of credibility in the crime arena or the public safety arena. I mean, the lieutenant governor's never done anything in that arena. I've been a prosecutor for 22 years. I served with Eric Holder in the Clinton administration as an assistant United States attorney. I was the state's attorney for 8 years. I, you know, prosecuted the snipers and a number of other cases that people know about. And I've been your attorney general for the last 8 years. I personally argued in front of the Supreme Court of the United States to keep a sex offender in jail We won that case 9-0. So I think my credibility on public safety and crime issues is strong. I agree with you, C4, that people aren't going to move here and jobs aren't going to come here if we continue to have 250, 300 murders a year, depending on how the Brown and O'Malley administration decides to count those. You know, we have the 7th most violent city here in Baltimore. We're the 4th most homicides in the country in Maryland, and we're the 9th most violent state in the country. And look, I'm in Montgomery County. We have over 1 million people there. Last year, 8 murders.
Well,
clearly we know what's going on.
Get closer to that. Baltimore County, which is right here next to Baltimore City, larger in population, had a number in the teens. We're over 100.
Right. And
going to 200.
People need to focus on that. There needs to be a partner at the state level that understands how to deal with crime issues and public safety. And look, down the street in D.C., up the street in Philly, those cities are booming in terms of jobs, but also in terms of crime rate reduction. And so we actually need somebody who understands these issues, understands community policing, understands community prosecution. To your point about arrests, I mean, I went down and testified this year on Redemption Shield statutes. And if you have a nonviolent misdemeanor in your past, trespassing, disturbing the peace or something like that, it shouldn't cost you from having a job. I'll tell you another area that we need to focus on is reentry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
not sure about laptops, though.
Yeah, the laptops. Well, the laptops is interesting. You know, the reporter didn't quite understand the story there. But we spend $1.3 billion on our criminal system. We have 23,000 people behind bars and 144,000 in our system, most of whom are coming out. And I've put a lot of people, there are a lot that need to be in there, but they're ultimately coming out. And the question is, are we going to continue the revolving door in our criminal policy that we have now, where 46% go back into jail within 3 years? And by the way, of the people coming out, 59% come into Baltimore
City.
Exactly. So are we going to continue to let them come back out in 3 years, or are we going to focus on recidivism? Michigan, Oregon, Virginia have done that. Michigan was able to close 20 correctional facilities. So instead of paying $33,000 a year to put somebody in a cage, make them a tax-paying citizen. These are parents of people, children of people, part of the fabric of the community. The iPad thing is actually a part of the component of what we want to do. And this is what it is. Look, there's no expectation of privacy in jail. So they can read your letters, then you're not going to be able to surf the internet. But for $50, giving somebody that we pay $33,000 a year to incarcerate, for $50, if they, let's say they want to be an auto mechanic or go to culinary school, like University of Phoenix, you can take an online go on an app and get educated online so that when you come out of jail, you have a certification to be an auto mechanic or a cook. And then you have companies that are willing to take a tax break, get a tax credit for hiring somebody, taking a chance on somebody that wants to make good. They don't want to go back to jail. They were just there. So that's where the internet comes in.
I go with the tax break a little stronger, but let's get to April. Excuse me, April in Baltimore. April, you're on board with Doug Gansler and me.
Hi, Mr. Gansler. My question was, why should jobs be our top priority in Maryland, and what about schools or crime?
And what about which?
What about schools or crime? So why jobs?
Yeah, I think jobs is what differentiates the lieutenant governor and me the most. I mean, I think that the middle class is being strangled by the lack of jobs. And if you don't have a job, then you're more apt to commit crime. But also in terms, I think schools, look, I got to tell you, schools is what is the most the thing I'm most passionate about. I think, literally the lieutenant governor will say we've got the number one schools in the country. And my answer to that is if you go to a Baltimore City public school and you think that's the number one school in the city and in the country, then you should vote for the lieutenant governor.
But also, let me stop you there, Doug Gansler, because I get sick and tired of us bragging about being number one in education. When you talk to college registrants who are getting our young people in, not just in Baltimore, but across the state, close to half of these students need remediation in math and English once they get to college. I'm tired of bragging.
Well, it's more than that. It's 80% of the kids from Baltimore City, for example, need remedial math, 70% remedial English. Only 94% of the ninth graders that are in school right now in Baltimore City will get a four-year education. Again, doesn't mean you're a bad person if you don't. As I said, Delegate Missouri is running for governor. She didn't graduate from college. But 94% of the ninth graders in Baltimore City will not graduate from a four-year college. It makes it harder to get a job. And so the education system is critical. One of the things we're talking about doing is when you're 16 years old, you have to stay in school till you're 18. When you're 16, if you don't want to continue the traditional path, every student in Maryland will have the option of doing a career or vocational apprenticeship. So they can do their math and their English in the morning. In the afternoon, let's say you want to be an electrician. It takes 10,000 hours to be certified in Maryland to be an electrician. In the afternoons, you'll begin that certification process so that when you're 18, you graduate with a diploma and a you could start work on Monday morning. At the front end, I was the first person running for governor to call for increasing pre-K from half day to full day. Now, you might know the lieutenant governor has been running a very nasty, dirty campaign for 9 months and a lot of negative mail saying I'm against pre-K expansion. It's on the record 6 months ahead that I think we ought to expand pre-K from half day to full day. All I said was, you can't do it tomorrow. You should start with the communities, the underserved communities, people 300% above the federal poverty line and below to start addressing this gap because we all pay for that gap.
Callers, please stay with me. Attorney General Doug Gansler is going to be staying with us in the next half hour. But I felt it was important going to the news, Doug, for you to kind of expound on this pre-K thing because, once again, it's very important from a budget standpoint. Heather Mazur says that she can pay for it all at once and expand pre-K universally. Anthony Brown says he can pay for it all at once. You have said that you would like to incrementally do it. Explain the differences between
those
views.
There's the big difference is I'm actually honest with the people out there in the state of Maryland. It's clearly you can't start it all at once. I mean, there's already trailers in the schools right now in the backs of schools. So to expand it out all at once doesn't make a lot of sense and it's unrealistic and people can see through that. I can say the reason why I started this whole issue of expanding pre-K from half day to full day and then the other candidates joined behind me months later was because of the achievement gap. So if you're in the underserved communities, what happens is when the children show up in kindergarten today, they have, say, 3,000 word vocabularies. And in the Howard counties and the Montgomery counties of the world, people show up and they have 8,000 to 10,000 word vocabularies, and the children never catch up. And so the idea was to expand pre-K from half day to full day, but begin in those particular areas where there's the need in the underserved communities, communities where the people are 300% above the federal poverty line and below, and then phase it in and make it voluntary for all Marylanders to be able to send their children to pre-K full day if they so choose to do.